Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Haley, and this is
The Bold on the Big Screen. Welcome to our second episode of The Bold on the Big Screen. Today we will be talking about Rosemary's Baby, which came out in 1968. It was written and directed by the infamous Roman Polanski and stars Mia Farrow as Rosemary Woodhouse, Ruth Gordon as Minnie Cassavet, and John Cassavetes as Guy Woodhouse. Now, before we get into anything else, we want to have a prefacing trigger warning because we will be talking about rape and sexual assault in this podcast because that is part of the movie. But if you do want to listen along, we will give another trigger warning right when we start talking about that. But yeah, let's get into the summary.
Yeah, so I will go ahead and summarize the plot of this movie. I do want to preface once again that we are going to include spoilers. It's again, kind of important to talk about the ending of this movie because that's part of where the thrilling and horror aspect comes in. So if you haven't seen it, definitely recommend going and seeing it. It's pretty easy to find on the internet and you won't regret it. So yeah, with that, I'm going to go ahead and get into the summary. So Rosemary's Baby is a classic horror film drama. It takes place in mid-1960s New York. In the film, we have a young couple, Rosemary and Guy Woodhouse. Yes, the guy's name is Guy, which I love. It's very 1960s of them. But the couple moves into a luxury New York apartment after the previous resident passes away. They are super eager to start their new lives and to start a family in their new home. After moving into the apartment, they meet their neighbors, an older couple named Minnie and Roman Cassavet. Eventually, Rosemary becomes pregnant. Minnie and Roman, the older couple who lives next door, are quick to be involved in the pregnancy, and arguably a little bit too involved. But Rosemary sees it as them just being a little bit lonely and really wanting to help her out however they can. Eventually, however, Rosemary becomes suspicious of the older couple's intentions when irregular and unexplainable things start to happen to her with her pregnancy. She begins to investigate the situation, only to discover that Minnie and Roman are actually part of a witch's coven, and that thanks to them, Rosemary's child is the spawn of Satan. There's a lot to unpack in this film, a lot of details to cover. The summary really only scratches the surface, so we're going to get more into these details when we talk about this film. So, as we usually do in our breakdown, we'll start talking about the things we liked, which I think Serena can agree that this movie, there's a lot of things to like. So yeah. This is definitely going to be where we get into the details of the movie. I'll start by just saying kind of a funny thing that has to do with my preferences. But anytime I'm watching a movie, and this is the case for a lot of old movies, I think, but anytime I'm watching a movie and they are running the credits at the beginning of the film, the first 30 seconds and I see credits, I'm like, you know what? This is going to be a good movie. Something about this is telling me that I'm going to enjoy this film. And that was the case for this one. You know, there's this like beautiful, is it black and white? I don't remember. It's like shots of New York, isn't it?
Yeah, it's shots of New York and then has the pink lettering.
Yeah, so and it's like, the credits. Just great. And I was like, first 30 seconds into the movie, I was like, yep. I was like, I'm going to like this. I'm going to enjoy this. So, yeah.
You just know. Yeah. The feeling. It gives a very haunting vibe right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Going into this movie, I knew the ending. I don't know exactly why I knew the ending. I think it was just I had seen the ending scene before. I just hadn't seen the entire movie. So I'm glad that I finally got to sit down and experience the whole thing. And I'm so glad I did because it really just made, oh, God, it was just, it's such a good horror movie. There's a reason why it's such a classic.
Oh my gosh, it's so good.
It is really good. Yeah.
And I didn't have that experience. I had never seen it. I did not know the ending. I'd seen probably clips and posters of it, so I knew it was about a pregnancy, and obviously the title kind of implies that as well. But I actually sat down and watched this movie with two of my friends. Shout out to Zoe and Sierra, who sat down and watched it with me. And we all kind of, at the beginning, were like, yeah, we have no idea what this movie is about. And that's always kind of a good moment when you sit down and you have no expectations. And we really liked the journey of getting to experience the story as it unfolds.
Yeah.
And so that even was just a great experience for me.
Absolutely. So my first bullet point, which is not that important for what I like, but it literally is everything for what I like. But the actual in-depth things, the visuals in this movie are incredible. I love the fact that I'm assuming it was probably Roman Polanski, put care into kind of showing the contrast between the Woodhouses and the Cassavetes. Like, the Woodhouses are very modern and they're very vibrant. But the Cassavetes, like, if you go into their
apartment, it's very dark and like maroon and it's very haunting. So it shows the contrast between them as personalities. But then you also have Minnie, who tries to fit in with the modern look, where she's wearing like all these vibrant clothes that don't really match. And it's like she's trying to relate to them. I feel like it's a symbol in a way, like she's trying to fit in with them, but she never really can because Rosemary finds her so annoying the whole time.
And it's like, I think you're kind of even torn as a viewer as to whether or not you like her or not. Because you're like, she's just like, she seems like a sweet old lady, but she's also like kind of crazy and like,
and annoying.
And there's to kind of reinforce that contrast, there's that great, you know, when they buy the apartment, it's very dark, just like the Castevet's apartment is. Mm-hmm. And then they purchase it, and then they just like completely modernize and paint the entire thing white.
Paint it white,
And so it becomes this very like bright environment. And I really wanted to talk about the apartment.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really impressive, the fact that almost the entire movie is shot in that apartment.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple scenes that take place outside and then like at the doctor's office, but I think I would say about 90% of it takes place in that apartment. And it's to the point that, you know, it's not a simple feat to tell a story in only one place and only one environment. And it's almost as if that apartment and that space actually becomes a character in the story.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think it's in large part because we are experiencing this through Rosemary's eyes. That's definitely how it feels. It feels like we are meant to be most in line with her character and to kind of like see the story through her perspective. And that apartment is where she spends most of her time. And so it makes sense that most of the story itself takes place within that space. And it's comforting. It's a comforting place, but it's also a terrifying place.
It is.
And we get to experience both of those kind of contradicting themes within the apartment. And I just think it's done incredibly. Also, it's like the most beautiful apartment I've ever seen. I would love to live there.
Oh, my goodness. I can only imagine how expensive that's got to be now.
Yeah, it's insane. But yeah, like that, the whole set and just everything about that was incredible.
It really was. It was so beautiful. And also, it only takes place in three rooms in the apartment, too. It's just the kitchen, the living room, and the bedroom, right?
Yeah.
So it's even just using those small spaces.
And even every room has its own feeling to it.
Yeah.
Like the bedroom, I don't know how they did it or what it was, but something about that bedroom was so horrifying.
I know, because it was small.
Yeah, and it was
like
just
very,
like
confining, and you felt like, you felt trapped, like Rosemary must
have
felt.
And I feel like every scene that took place in that bedroom, you were just left to be uncomfortable.
Exactly.
And there's that clock in the background that is constantly, anytime there's a scene in the bedroom, there's that clock that's ticking. And just something about that constant sound just makes you feel like it's like unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Incredible.
Yeah. Great interior decor by Miss Rosemary Woodhouse in this movie.
Oh my gosh, I know.
So good. I was like, damn.
But there's that scene where like, Minnie comes in and asks how much that chair costs. And she's like, oh, $250. I was like, $250 in 1965?
Did you look up what it was?
Did you?
It was like $2,000. Let me just look it up one more
time. We were all like, what? $250? That's so expensive. We're like, dang.
That is $2,355 for a
love
freaking
seat.
Chair. This chair was so like boring too. Like not boring, it was cute.
It's like you could find 10 of those at Goodwill today, you know?
Yeah. I also want to talk about the apartment building itself, because the whole point of this building was that they knew from the get-go that there was something wrong with it, right? Because
it's like tons of people died in it or something.
And it was an old lady who owned it last, who was like 89, and then Hutch, rest in peace, Hutch. Hutch was the only good guy on Rosemary's side.
I know. Hutch.
Hutch was like, what was his name? Adrian Mercado was murdered, and he could conjure Satan. And then there was the Trench sisters who ate babies or whatever. And you know what's so funny is Rosemary wanted the apartment so badly, but Guy didn't. Guy was like, oh, I don't know. But he loved his wife. They signed the lease.
That was the beginning of the end.
Beginning of the end. But yeah, so the apartment, even though it was so beautiful on the inside, it had so many things wrong with it.
They should have known the moment that weird dresser thing was in front of that door. I was like, get the hell out of there.
He was like, oh, I wonder why the secretary is in front of this closet that just has a vacuum in it. They're like, huh, weird.
That's fine. Let's just pretend. Weird. Let's just ignore
that. It is totally not a door into your apartment from the cast of S apartment.
Yeah, especially since we already know that these two apartments were connected prior to them being separated. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit just about the story. That was my first bullet point, was just that it's just a great story. You know, it's simple.
Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, it's not a super complex story, but it also, you know, it talks about some complex themes. And one of my favorite things that films, when films do, is when they make a story that's character driven. And I think that this is one of the prime examples of a character driven story. They do a really good job of developing very well-rounded two-dimensional characters that all have things that we like about them and things that we dislike about them. We know the old couple, as we learn, is kind of, you know, they're the bad guy, supposedly. Well, they are the bad guy, but...
Yeah.
And we are suspicious of them, kind of from the get-go, but we also kind of, like, write it off because they're just lonely old people. And you're kind of like, you know what? They're a little weird and, like, kind of suspicious, but, you know, they are... Yeah, there are things to like about them, especially Minnie's character, I think. Mm-hmm. She's just so adorable to me.
I know, I love
Minnie. Yeah, she's just so adorable.
From the beginning, I really liked her. And then you start feeling what Rosemary's feeling probably is like, oh, my God, this lady is annoying. Like, she will not leave her alone. She's like, oh, my God, what are you doing? What are you doing? She's so nosy.
Yeah, and then, of course, you know, you start to realize what she's doing to Rosemary, and that's when you start to be like, oh, no. And you don't like them anymore because they are sort of torturing Rosemary in a way.
Overbearing, for sure.
Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. Just, like, the characters are just so incredible.
They are. They're so well-written. And it's, like, they have such excellent arcs, especially Guy. Because at the beginning, he's skeptical of the apartment, and he's skeptical of the Castevets, because Rosemary's like, we need to go to dinner tonight. And he's like, well, if we befriend these old people, we'll never get rid of them. And then he ends up being the one that's so attached to them.
Yeah, and, like, there was that scene when she finds out she's pregnant, and he's like, I'm going to tell the Castevets.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. And all of a sudden, you're like, okay, now they're BFFs.
No. And then, like, when she doesn't want to invite them to the dinner party.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, are you so sure about that? Maybe we should talk to Saperstein.
Dr. Saperstein.
Dr. Saperstein.
Yeah, it's just, I love the characters.
Yeah.
And it's them that makes it's so thrilling. And it's because, and I think, I don't know, this is an interesting film because I would classify it as a horror film, but it's not like your typical, like, there's no jump scares, there's no gore, really. There's no, like, unnecessary violence or, like, possessions or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the most of the, you know, it doesn't come until the very end, that stuff. But it's thrilling because of the way that they make you invested in the characters.
Yeah.
And you really feel for Rosemary when she's going through, you feel how terrified she is. You can sort of you really empathize with her, and you're on her side the whole time.
Exactly.
It's like you're seeing the story through her eyes. And so when she goes through that journey of all of these torments and all of these horrible things that are happening to her, you feel it, and it's painful, and it's scary,
and it's
horrifying, and like all of the best ways. You know, there's not anything particularly scary that even happens, nothing that like makes you jump or makes you like scared, but it's the story itself that is so well crafted that it just, the idea of it and the experience of it is what is horrifying about this film.
I know. And I was talking to one of my best friends, and she's not like super into horror, but this is one that she had seen, and she was like, there is not one horror movie that scares me like Rosemary's Baby does. And she says it's not because there's jump scares or because there's gore or because it's, like, necessarily terrifying. It's just the premise is so, it's, like, horrible. It's, like, this helplessness.
Yeah.
Like, Rosemary can't do anything because everyone, she's, like, in a bubble.
Yeah.
She can't escape it, no matter what she does.
And it's interesting because the ending doesn't even really come as a surprise.
Mm-mm.
You kind of figure it out before Rosemary even figures it out. And so it's not the, like, shock of, like, oh my gosh, this baby is Satan's child that is the scary part.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you know what is going on and there is nothing you can do about it. And you know there's nothing that Rosemary can do about it.
It's so sad because from the beginning, you know how much she wants children. She talks about it. And her siblings have so many children. And so to have that rip from her is deeply devastating for her. So when she knows that she has the chance to raise this baby, even though it's the spawn of Satan, she starts to rock the cradle, right? She starts to rock the cradle, and they're, like, urging her to be the mother, Adrian.
So crazy. And,
and she does it because she wanted the baby. And it's just so sad for her, like, that's her only option. Like, what else would she have? You know what I mean? If she walks away from this, she wouldn't have Guy. She wouldn't have any of them. She'd be just alone. If you think deeper about it, it's just so sad. That's like her only option.
Yeah, she's literally helpless. Yeah. And she had no choice in this. And she's just, she's helpless and alone. And that is just so terrifying. Yeah.
Seriously. It is really good. And I love the climax where everything starts to fall into place when Hutch dies. And she's given the book and the cryptic message. Mm. The name is an anagram. And you see her with the Scrabble pieces trying to figure it out.
I love that scene.
And then she realizes that in the book, it says Stephen Mercado. And so she puts Stephen Mercado out. And then she starts spelling out Roman Castevet.
And you're like,
she's like, oh my God. Roman's the son of the dude who was murdered.
Yeah.
That's crazy. When we picked this movie, we didn't think about the fact that this would have so many connections to Don't Worry, Darling, which we covered in the last episode, because this also has commentary on misogyny, just like Don't Worry, Darling does, in the same way that in that film, Florence Pugh had nobody to turn to. She was isolated in the same way Rosemary does, but this movie does it 100 times better.
So good. And yeah, that idea, I think, of domesticity.
Yeah.
Because again, we talked about the apartment as the place that she's kind of entrapped because she is a domestic housewife. She she has no reason to leave. And, the apartment is that sort of domestic environment where Rosemary as the woman is physically and emotionally trapped. And I think it points a lot to her. There's a lot of moments when she just lets other people decide her life for her.
Mm-hmm. I have that written here, that it just symbolizes the lack of autonomy women have of their bodies, especially in that era. This is pre-Roe v. Wade, which I guess got overturned anyway. But this is pre-1973, right? So, it's not as surface level as, Don't Worry, Darling was, where it's like, I don't know, you know exactly what it's trying to convey. But this is done in such a ritualistic and extreme way that it pulls you in and makes you realize just how much women didn't have control over their bodies at the time. And it was just like those little things in the movie, when Rosemary cut her hair and Guy was so resentful of it. She was like, he said, you paid for that? She just wanted to cut her hair. But at the same time, he cares more about that, even though she's in excruciating pain. Yeah. And he's like, well, whatever, but you cut your hair? What the hell's wrong with you?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and everything builds up.
Exactly.
It's like all of these little things of her not being able to control her own life and her own body, and then it builds up to her, the only option she have is to accept this devil child, because what other, she has
what
no freedom to do really anything else.
She can't do anything else, and no matter what she did to try and prevent it, nothing she could do.
Oh, it's so sad.
It is really sad. I'm going to start crying in this podcast. We're probably thinking about this so much deeper than most people do. We're like, this is so sad. Everyone's like, this is scary. It's actually so devastating.
That's what we do. That's our job.
The only scary thing about this movie is how many emotions you have.
I know. It's like you wanna cry. And then,
literally.
Yeah. No. Another thing I have, which we kind of touched on a little bit, is just the attention to detail.
Yeah.
I can't even begin. And you mentioned the Scrabble board.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things I wrote down in my notes when I was watching the movie, because there's a scene when they're playing Scrabble,
earlier on.
Then she's thinking about this anagram, and she goes, and you're like, she's going to pull out the Scrabble board, and she pulls out the Scrabble board, and you're like, oh my gosh, connections. They introduced that Scrabble board earlier on, and now they're bringing it back, and she's going to use it to solve this.
Mm-hmm.
Just the details from that down to the fact that, the first time they go into the Castevet's apartment, they come home and Rosemary mentions something. She's like, did you notice that there was a bunch of empty spots on their wall?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of their pictures were taken down. And you hear that and you're kind of like, well, that's weird. And then you forget about it. But then towards the end, when they go back in, when she breaks back into the apartment at the very end, all of those paintings, those witch paintings are back up. And you're like, oh, shit, that's why the paintings were down, because they're witches and they didn't want them to know.
Exactly. And another really important symbol throughout this movie is the Tanis root charm. The fact that Tanis root was supposed to be this good luck herb, but it's not real. It's not a real thing at all.
Devil's pepper.
It was devil's pepper, and it's a mold or fungus that probably, if we're thinking actually scientifically about this, probably made Rosemary sick. You think about it.
I don't think, was she wearing it when she was sick? I thought she got sick before she started wearing it.
Well, I'm assuming that maybe she would have put Tanis root in the drink she was drinking.
Oh,
we don't actually know what was in it.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to be a good luck charm, but Terry, who's in the movie for like 5 seconds, is wearing it and jumps out a window and kills herself.
Do we think that's what happened, though?
I don't know.
And I actually, we can talk about this now. I was going to bring this up later. I don't know. Yeah, I was kind of wondering, like what her story... Because part of me is like, okay, what if they, you know, Terry, that's her name, right, is staying with the cast of Vets. Maybe their plan was to get her pregnant.
Oh.
And then Rosemary comes along, and they're like, oh, Rosemary is such a better option. We don't need this other girl anymore.
And also,
they push her out the window. Who knows, really? But that's kind of what was running through my head. I was like, well, she dies right as Rosemary comes, and then they impregnate Rosemary with Satan's child. So it's like, maybe... they thought she was a better option, and so they were like, let's get rid of Terry. We don't need her anymore.
And it's the interesting thing, though, is that at the end, Minnie is trying to make Rosemary feel better by saying, Satan picked you out of all the women in the world.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So did Satan pick Terry first and then saw Rosemary and was like, oh,
just kidding.
And then throws Terry out the window?
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird.
But I think that the charm had something to do with it.
Yeah.
For sure.
And just, again, it's just part of this whole, like, building situation. The building is, something's messed up with it.
And there was also, I believe there was a secretary or something in the doctor's office who said that the charm smelled like Saperstein's aftershave.
Yeah, like, he
which
also...
which, like, insinuates that he was involved with all this trickery.
Also, I noted that Rosemary's name is an herb. Do you think that's important?
Yeah, and there's also another symbol in the movie is the roses. Whenever Guy does something wrong, he brings her roses.
Those weird roses, yeah.
He always brings her roses, which is interesting too. And I also think another big symbol is the hall closet, which also symbolizes that, like, no matter what Rosemary does, she can't prevent people from invading her body. Because
yeah,
even
like
when she locks the door.
It's an allegory for her.
Yeah.
Oh,
even when she locks the door, they can still get in. And they're creeping in the background.
Oh my God, I love that.
They're like tiptoeing.
So great.
Oh, God.
Oh my gosh, that was horrible. Oh, it was great and horrible in all the right ways.
Literally. Oh my God, it was so good. But that, to echo what you said, just the attention to detail. I love when movies do that, where you can like pinpoint the little symbols. It feels like 10th grade English class again.
And everything is everything is intentional.
And everything is
every
intentional.
Every decision they made adds to the development of the story.
And it just makes you think.
Beautiful.
Oh, it was so good. Yeah, the story was just incredible. The way that they conveyed everything was amazing. What else do I have on here? Oh, the dream sequences.
Oh, that was my next one, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, twinning. I love the dream sequences. They were so well done. I love when a movie or a TV show can really show how weird dreams are, how much they don't make sense. And my favorite dream sequence in the movie was right after they had found Terry's body, and Rosemary's starting to fall asleep, and she can hear Minnie and Roman fighting, and then in her dream it's the nun yelling.
Yeah.
I just love that, because that happens, where like real world sounds integrate themselves into your own dreams, and it felt so real. It was just such a, I don't know, it like gave me chills. I was like, oh, that's so real and so good.
And they do it in a way that makes you confused as to whether it's dream or reality.
Exactly.
And
also, there was that dream sequence when the whole thing with the whole ritual is happening with Satan, but you have who I assume is JFK and Jackie Kennedy in it. There's like the woman in the white dress who's talking to Rosemary in that dream. She looks like Jackie Kennedy to me. And I looked this up too, and somebody said that another man on the boat was supposed to be JFK. So I was like, what is the point of that? Is it because at the time they were like the perfect couple, but it went wrong? Because obviously JFK died.
What year is he? 65? 63.
63.
And this
takes place
66?
66.
Because there's that New Year's Eve party, and I think
Eve,
it's like 66.
It goes into 66.
I think, yeah.
Hold on.
Could be wrong on that, but it's something around there. Interesting.
It is very interesting. I don't know what the JFK and Rosemary's Baby. I swear I read this.
Deep dive into the cultural context. I think you could honestly do an entire analysis just on the dream sequences,
like,
and what they
literally
mean and what they add to the story. It's and there's not, they use them in moderation, which is works very well. And again, it's all intentional.
Yeah.
It all adds to the
exactly.
overall story.
And I will say on IMDb there is a character in the credits as Mrs. John F. Kennedy. So it
Look
was
at
supposed
you.
To be Jackie and JFK on the boat.
Wow.
But I don't know the point of that. It seems very complex and there's a reason, but I haven't completely, like, cracked the code yet of why they were there. I don't know if it's just because they were important at the time or if it was because they were, like, the perfect American couple, like, Guy and Rosemary were supposed to be, but then obviously didn't work out in the end.
Yeah, their relationship was real stable up until the end.
But who knows? That is just something that came into my mind when I was watching that scene. What else do you have on the things you like?
I think we covered a lot of it.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't talk about acting.
Oh, yes.
Literally,
you
I have
the expert.
So
yeah, you are the expert in that, so you should go into it.
So Mia Farrow, this was her first, like, real role, which I think is incredible. She was only 20. She would have been, like, 22 when they were probably filming this. So she was super young. Oh, my God, you are 22. Haley just had a birthday. So happy late birthday, Haley.
Thank you.
I'm going to use my favorite word of all time, which is ingenue. She's, like, the perfect ingenue. She's, like, naive, which that's what that means, naive and vulnerable. And she just plays it so well.
She's impressionable.
Very, yeah. And she plays it so well. And this being, like, her first leading role, like, before this she was famous for a soap opera. And then you have John Cassavetes as Guy, who, oh my God, he plays the role of King Gaslighter so well. I called him King Gaslighter. He is I call him the gaslighting narcissist, because he really is. Like, he, every time he does something wrong, he's like, oh, it's my fault, I'll be better, and then he's never better. And obviously the whole intention of this ritual is to make him more successful, to give the baby to Satan, right?
What a dick.
I know. He is such an asshole. But I love, John Cassavetes plays him, and if there's one thing all of our listeners need to know about me is that he's my favorite director of all time. And he would star in movies to make enough money to fund his own projects.
I didn't even know that.
So now you know.
Yeah.
So this movie probably funded a movie he made, like, 2 years later called Husbands. But that's why he would star in, like, different projects, so he could raise the money to make his own indie films.
I didn't even know he was a director.
Yeah,
that's
he's
badass.
A director. I think my favorite little instance with him, his performance, is at the end when Rosemary breaks into the Castevet's apartment and sees everyone mingling, and he stands up to, like, to try and calm her down. But then he knows he has nothing to say, so he just sits down and, like, cowers behind his hands. And I just thought it was just, like, it was, he didn't say one word, but just, like, the weakness that took over him and the guilt. You see how, like, guilty he feels, and he just, like, hides behind his hands as if Rosemary wouldn't be able to see him.
That whole scene when she's walking in, everybody just looks at her and says nothing. Oh, and it's that perspective shot, isn't it? Because she's,
yeah,
it's like you're literally in her head, in her eyes.
I also I love the way that scene is shot, because you have also the part where she's screaming, saying, what did you do to his eyes? And then I think it's Roman says he has his father's eyes. Oh. And then it quickly pans to Guy. And she's like, what do you mean? Guy has normal eyes.
Oh, God, so
and then you just have the overlay of Satan's eyes over Guy. And that's her, like, realization that, oh, my God, I was, trigger warning, raped by Satan.
Oh, it's so good. It's so
horrible.
That whole, the ending, it just, oh, my gosh. Oh, it's so sad.
It is so good. But that, my point is, John Cassavetes did a really good job. But the star of the show is Ruth Gordon, who plays Minnie Castevet. I'm going to give a little history about her. But at this point, she had been in the entertainment business for 53 years. She was prominent on stage and also in silent films starting in 1915. But as soon as, like, the golden era of film started, which was, like, the 1930s, they didn't really see her as screen worthy anymore, because she was getting older. So she, because that was how the business was, very terrible to women.
Oh, yeah, and she wasn't like a Hollywood, like, stereotypical,
like,
aesthetic looking.
Yeah, she wasn't like Katharine Hepburn or like Betty Davis or Joan Crawford or anything like that. So she went on a pretty long hiatus. I think it was for maybe, I had it in here and it's not here anymore.
Didn't she direct some films?
She
too?
Wrote a lot of
or
movies.
Wrote them. Okay,
yeah. But she didn't come back until 65, and then her first, I think her acting, first Academy Award nomination for acting was for this movie, and she won Best Supporting Actress for Rosemary's Baby, which says a lot, and that was the only Oscar awarded to a horror film until Silence of the Lambs, which was, like, 23 years later.
No way!
Yeah.
Wait, so she won You said she won Best Supporting Actress.
Best Supporting Actress for Minnie Cassavetes. So I just
that's
think
incredible.
It's such a...
What a success story.
I know, what a success story that she was able to do that. Like, it's so incredible to me.
Is she still alive? Probably
no,
not.
No, she died, I think, in the 80s. But she was born in 1896. So crazy
oh
to
my.
Me. And that was a note I had in this. I was like, these people are old. These people are old.
Yeah, dang. I mean, 1968, mm-hmm. What was that like? 50 years ago?
Yeah, it was 54 years ago.
That's
but
insane.
But yeah, it's, so I said, yeah, it's worthy to note that she won this award 54 years after making her way into the entertainment business. It was her second acting award.
Wow.
For being in the business for 54 years.
Well, she is amazing.
She's amazing in that she plays the role
like,
so
oh
well.
Oh my gosh. You kind of like her.
Yeah.
And then you get annoyed by her and then you're like, oh,
she's just an old lady.
Yeah,
she's lonely.
Like,
yeah.
She just wants to care about Rosemary. And then you're like, okay, now she's like giving her these weird drinks and Rosemary's super sick. And then, you know, you find out and you're like, oh, well, she is great.
She is so good. So good for Ruth Gordon. And everyone should listen to her acceptance speech because it's really adorable and really awesome. And I just said, like, the rest of the cast did really good, especially Saperstein because you hate him the whole time. He's the coven doctor. Oh, you hate him and his tendencies.
Dr. Saperstein.
I think that was his name, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, that was his name,
okay.
I think.
Memorable. No, something like that. I hate him so much I don't even care. But yeah, that was my whole thing about acting.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not the expert in acting, so...
There's your little tidbit of history, guys. Take that with you.
It was great.
Should we go about the stuff we didn't like?
Yes.
All
yeah.
Right.
Let's go into it.
This one's hard.
I know.
I really had to search for things I didn't like. My first thing was they mentioned the Trench Sisters. And, I think the Trench Sisters are actually real. And I don't know if they were. But the thing was it seemed so important because they mentioned in the beginning that the Trench Sisters had something to do with the apartment building. And then there was also the murder with the Mercado guy.
Yeah.
But that was kind of said in passing. It was just more like the Trench Sisters, and then it was never brought up again.
Yeah, I think I even missed that. So.
Because, like, it insinuated that they were the more important aspect of why the apartment building was cursed, but then we never heard about them again.
Is it the apartment building itself that's cursed, or do you think it just has a history of inhabiting residents who are witches?
I think it's that.
Yeah, okay. Because it's Hutch who talks about it, doesn't he?
Yeah,
and that was, like, in the beginning when I didn't even know who he was. I was like, is he your dad? Who is this guy?
I think he is just meant to be their friend. It says here that he's technically Rosemary's father figure.
Okay.
Which makes it sadder. Damn.
Yeah.
If that's really, like, who he's supposed to be.
I know, it is sad. And then he dies.
He does die.
Tragically.
Very tragically. But that was the only thing I didn't like. Like, really, with the story was I thought that we should have had more background with Trench Sisters.
Yeah, a couple of little background things would have been helpful. I thought it was a little bit slow.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I feel kind of bad saying this because I think it has a lot to do with how in today's day and age, like social media and like TikTok and stuff like that has wired our brains to have such a shorter attention span that we aren't used, you know, to dealing with these slower burn movies.
Exactly.
And not to like shit on Marvel, but also to shit on Marvel, you know, the movies that are popular today, like Marvel movies, are just, there's a lot of excitement, but not a lot of substance. And so it's not a slow development. It's just like a lot of things happening, but it's kind of a lot of surface level things.
Exactly.
This film was a lot of very important underlying things, but I think the beginning is a little bit slow. And again, I was kind of grasping for things to talk about things I didn't like because I enjoyed this movie so much. But I think right before shit starts to hit the fan, like that first half, I was starting to be like, okay, this could move a little bit quicker.
Exactly.
And
I think that not only does modern media condition us to be that way, but I think horror in general. Because if we're expecting this to be a horror film, we're expecting thrill and gore and things like that. And we aren't given that in this. So it doesn't feel like a horror movie to be scared. Is to focus on the premise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the scary part.
Yeah,
that's
to
what
be
makes
invested.
It a horror.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I think that there were times where, in the beginning, especially, where I was like, "Where's this going?" Like, I had a point in time where I was like, "Should we have picked this movie? Is this going to be exciting to talk about?"
Yeah.
And then, but it picks up.
Yeah.
So it is absolutely a slow burn. And it's not that I hate slow burns. It's just like when you go into a movie expecting something to be horrifying or expecting something to be thrilling, you're not given that. You're kind of a little disappointed.
It's not the kind of horror movie to invite all of your friends over for a Halloween party. It's not a slasher film. Uh-uh. You're not going to get any crazy like murders or crazy like shit happening. And if that's like what you're going for, this is not the movie to watch in that moment.
This is
But I would also say that this is a good movie, a good horror movie for people who don't like horror movies.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to like keep you up at night. You're gonna feel emotionally traumatized a little bit because of it, but you're not gonna be like scared to drive home or you know. So it does give you the like thrill of being scared and terrified without all of the creepy, you know, really scary horror movie stuff.
It's far more psychological too. And I think something that I know we're talking about things that we hate, but I think that it's also
even when we talk about things we hate, we talk about things we like.
I think what's so important about this movie is that you see that it really paved the way for other movies that came out later. Like, did you see a little bit of like Ari Aster in this? Like a little bit of Hereditary and Midsommar?
Yes, I was going to mention that when you talked about, you mentioned something earlier about how this movie like sits with you. That's exactly what Hereditary did for me. It's like Hereditary is like a modernized, extreme version of this movie.
Rosemary's Baby. I think so, absolutely. And you can just see the way that it inspired so much. So it's like there are those points that you were maybe a little bit bored and you don't, it's moving slow, but you also appreciate the fact that this movie is so important. And that's why you give it a chance. And then it finally hits you how amazing it is as soon as you get to that kind of rising action aspect.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
Another thing that I didn't like, and I can't really fault the movie for this, but this is just something in 60s and 70s movies. I hate that the blood is always, like, neon red. Like, you only see blood once in this movie, and it's when Terry dies. And it's, like, it really takes you away from it. It's, like, this looks like a crayon. You know what I mean? And
I do.
I realized, though, because I remember watching I watched a video, commentary by Martin Scorsese when he was making Taxi Driver, where he said that he had made the blood in that film visually realistic, and then the MPA, I think they are in charge of rating films, gave it an NC-17, which is like
because the blood was too real.
The blood was too real, and then when he boosted the saturation and made it look not real, he got his R rating back. So I wonder if that's why blood always looked like that.
Maybe.
Because
that's interesting.
Wore pansies back then. God. So the movie just, and the blood in the movie, it kind of took me away for a split second. I was like, that doesn't look real.
Yeah.
It's not as like, it takes you, I'm sure back then though, if you're watching this on like a movie screen where color isn't as accurate as our computers or our TV, our TVs, it probably
seemed
realer.
And like the movie does kind of have that. It definitely has that 70s. I don't even want to say dated because it's not dated, but it does have that 70s aesthetic, or 60s, I should say, 60s, 70s aesthetic to
which
it.
Which you appreciate, but that is one thing. It does tend to take you away a little bit when it doesn't look real. You're like, oh, she's not really dead because it looks like a crayon. The only other thing, and this is where we're going to go into the trigger warning of this, is I think that Roman Polanski's background kind of taints this movie for me a little bit.
Yeah, just I don't know his background super well, so ruin it for me.
I'm going to talk about it. It's not good. I'm just going to read from what I've got here. So John Cassavetes, he's a different director. Roman Polanski, he is no longer allowed in the U.S. because he is a fugitive.
Oh, that I did know. He ran away. Is he still alive?
He is still alive.
Where is he in, like, the Caribbean?
He lives in France because he is citizen of France. So he was able to escape extradition. So he used to be a free man in France. But anyway, he was charged with 6 counts of criminal behavior for raping a 13-year-old girl in 1977.
I did not know that.
So, and he was, he pled not guilty, and they gave him, a plea deal that he was going to get, 90 days, probation or something. It was something really lax. But then the judge said he was actually going to sentence him to 50 years. So that's when Roman Polanski, fled. And so he is no longer allowed here.
Was that before or after the Sharon Tate situation?
This was after. And this is another thing, too, to also think about. This was Roman Polanski's last film he made before his wife, Sharon Tate, was murdered in 1969 by the Charles Manson family.
The Manson people.
Yeah. So that's, there's a lot of real life.
Well, it's kind of, it's kind of scary. It's like eerily related,
yeah,
right? Because Sharon Tate was pregnant when she got murdered, and this is the last movie that he made before that happened. It's like, ooh, that's kind
and
of
this,
kind of scary.
And it, yeah, it you think about that in the back of your mind, but also the reason why Polanski's background kind of taints this for me is because I have it written here and I wrote it so well, so I have to. It's because this movie symbolizes the patriarch's attack on women's autonomy, but he violated a woman's, a girl's autonomy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of
contradictory.
Like, I don't know. It's so contradictory. And you're like, ugh. It kind of tastes a little bit.
Yeah. It gives you a bad taste.
Yeah.
In your
a little
mouth.
Sour
ugh,
taste. But
sucks.
Maybe that's also goes to show just how much women can't escape it. No matter if a man has written this film to kind of advocate for women.
Do you think he actually wrote it to advocate for women, though?
I don't know. But also, another point, guys, is this was based off a book.
Oh,
so it's not like Roman Polanski made this up, either.
Right.
I forgot to mention that Roman Polanski adapted this film from a book by Ira Levin, I think is his name. Yeah, Ira Levin. That is also something to keep in mind. He didn't just make this up. But it just seems interesting that Roman Polanski picked this movie when he had those tendencies, I suppose.
Yeah, that is weird. And he did it so well. Damn it.
I know.
Like,
I
know. Ugh.
So
dang.
That was just my final little thing of what I didn't like.
Yeah, I have some kind of surface level things I didn't like.
Let's lighten the air again.
Again, I was watching this with my friends, and we just were so annoyed that, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, that when Rosemary cuts her hair, I mean, obviously she's kind of sickly looking. She cuts her hair, and then she has that party, and every single person she meets at that party is like, wow, you look terrible.
I know.
You look horrible. And we're just sitting there watching this movie, and we're like, wow, everyone is so quick to tell her how horrible she looks.
I know.
And it was kind of like, that's a little bit rude of them. Damn.
Like, they can't just ask, are you okay?
Yeah. They're
you know
like,
what I mean? And I think it was also a big part of pop culture at the time, seeing this movie. A lot of people end up getting that haircut because her and I think Twiggy at the time was her name. She was a model who had the same haircut.
Mm-hmm.
So Rosemary paved the way.
Yeah. It's like
she set the trend.
Let's not push her down,
she
people.
She slayed.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And then here's my, it says my number one critique.
Yeah.
I want to see what that baby looks like. They don't
I
show
know.
It. Just, and like the whole time I'm sitting, again, me and my friends were sitting there and we're like, show us the baby. Like we want to see what this like devil child, Satan spawn looks like.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it had to do with how old this movie is and they didn't want to like make some horrible practical effect or whatever. But I just really wish I could have seen the child.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe they did it on purpose, but I wish.
I took it as, first of all, that I don't think they would have made a good enough.
I mean, but they made
prop.
Satan, kind of.
They did.
With his, like,
and he was scared,
weird
but, like,
fingers.
What would they have made? And ugh. I think that's what makes that part so good is that it leaves it to your own imagination, which is also kind of terrifying because you imagine the worst. You're like, oh, my God, that baby must be so terrible they won't even show us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're
but
right.
But at the same time, it's frustrating. It's like, I want to see.
Rosemary has that great reaction.
Uh-huh.
She, like, looks at it and she's, like, freaks out.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, what is it? What is it? What is
I
it?
Know.
And we don't get it. And it's like, no.
I can imagine he's got, like, yellow eyes with, like,
well, he does have his dad's eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was like the one thing I was like, ugh. I mean, I'll get over it. Like, whatever, it's fine. But I was just like, no, I wish I could see
it. I'm conflicted about it. It's like, I wanted to see it, but I also understand why.
It could have ruined it if they had done it wrong.
Imagine, like, it panned and it was like the worst prop ever. Everyone's like, oh.
Yeah, I guess it could have broken the film.
It could have.
If it had been bad. So, you know, maybe it was a good decision.
Uh-huh.
All right, fine. I changed my mind. It's not the worst. It's not my number one critique. I have a few questions about, like, I'd love to discuss.
All right.
We already talked about, I wanted to know what the role of Terry was, like where her place was in the story.
Yeah.
We sort of already talked about that. I'm also curious as to what you think about the old lady who died, who owned the apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think she was part of the witch's coven? She like grew a lot of herbs in her house. And yeah.
But the thing
But
was,
she had that thing in front of the door. So she was like, don't enter my fucking house. But I wonder like what, if you think.
See, I don't think she was a part of it. Because if we know that if we're going to go into herbs here, Tanis root was some kind of evil fungus or something. Mm-hmm. But she grew, the old lady beforehand. What was her name? They said her name.
I don't remember.
I think her name was literally like, it was something like garden. Gardenia.
Oh!
Yeah. Her name was Miss Gardenia, mm-hmm. which is also a floral name. Mm-hmm. She grew, it was like rosemary and like thyme and all those things that are all very good herbs. They're all positive. So I think that she had nothing to do with it.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because I don't really know where I stand on that.
I don't know either. Because, I don't know. It's so interesting. I don't know. I wonder.
The other thing is like, she also goes into a coma. And then she dies in the coma.
Oh.
Right? Isn't that what they say? Which is exactly what happens to Hutch.
Hutch.
So it's like, did they want her to die so that some couple could move in? I don't know.
You're
it's like
so right.
It's hard to say. I'm not fully convinced either way that she's involved or not.
Oh. There was like a piece of paper in the beginning.
Oh, was it cursive that I couldn't read?
Hold on. Wait. I have to actually find this. Sorry, we're pausing.
Should I do a little intermission jingle? Serena researching.
Oh, yeah. It's a handwritten letter that says, I can no longer associate myself.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, what?
That was mind blown.
So she was involved.
She
decided
must have been.
She no longer wanted to be involved.
I wonder if her growing those herbs was to, like, cleanse.
Maybe.
And then she pushed Also, when I'm saying secretary, guys, he calls this like tall boy dresser a secretary, which is like this very heavy thing. But he calls it a secretary for some reason.
Yeah, I remember.
It looks like a dresser.
Like, yeah, it looks like a dresser.
And he pushed it against the closet.
Oh my gosh,
that's blown my mind. I'm speechless. I can no longer associate myself.
See what we mean? Every little detail plays a role in this. It's great. I love it. Okay, next question. After that mind blowing moment. Do you think Rosemary will join the coven and take care of the baby?
Yes.
You think she will?
I think so.
Because you're right. She does, like, rock it at the end. Yeah. Because when I wrote this question, obviously, this was before we had this whole discussion, and I hadn't really, like, thought through all of it. And so I was like, I don't really know. But talking about it and being like, mm-hmm. Yeah, she has no other option. And you know, it is her child, right? Mm-hmm.
I think
she will probably join.
I think she will either join or she won't live. And I don't think, like, they're going to murder her, but I think that she is so traumatized that she will choose not to, if you know what I'm saying.
That's so sad.
As they say on TikTok, unalive.
Oh, that's so sad.
I really don't think. I cannot imagine Rosemary living beyond this. And if they do anything to her, they're going to put her in a coma like they did everyone else.
But
I don't think
it seems like they want her to be a part of it. It seems like they don't want to kill her because they're like, they want her to be his mother.
Well, I think they also know that she's a weak link, because if she doesn't side with it and she goes out and no one believed her though when she told Dr. Hill about it.
Oh my god, that
was
terrible. Yeah,
but if she doesn't have evidence, if she stole the baby, or I think they're also worried that she might kill the baby.
Yeah,
which I low key thought she was gonna do when she had the knife.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my gosh, she can kill the baby. She does not though. Anyway.
Because she that's before she knows it's safe, right? Because she thinks they just stole it and are using it for rituals or whatever. And so she goes in there intending to kill everyone else and save the baby. And then she's like, oh, wait, never mind. Nothing can be undone about this. That was my last question. I don't know if you had any questions.
I don't have any questions, but literally that little tenant thing blew my mind. Miss Gardenia with the I can't associate myself. Well... should we give our ratings?
Or final thoughts
slash
ratings? Yeah, you go first.
My final thoughts, I thought this was an incredible movie. It is now one of my favorite horror films. Everyone did a good job. My favorite director is in it. I love John Cassavetes, so it'll hold a special place in my heart. But there's really not much bad to say about it, so great movie on my part.
What do you rate it? Out of 5.
Out of 5. I'm going to give this one a 4.5 out of 5, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty good. From my final thoughts, I have written here, it said, I can't believe I have not seen this movie earlier. I was genuinely doing myself a disservice by never having seen this film before. I think it's a classic. I think everybody should see it, whether you like horror movies, whether you don't. I think everybody can gain something from watching this movie. I think the story, like we talked about many times, is in itself the horrifying aspect. I will say, I don't know that it, like, blew me away. I don't think it's, like, the... I don't know. The more we talk about it, the more I'm like, man, it's so good.
I know. There's just so much to unpack.
So good.
There's so much to unpack.
But really, it's a masterpiece. It's an incredible film. Screw Roman Polanski. Like,
yeah, screw him.
Boo. Moral of the story, don't trust old people. I have that written down. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Old men.
I'm just kidding. That's a joke. Anyway, I wrote 4 out of 5 down here, but I am also tempted to give it 4.5. Oh, but it's so, I think I'm going to give it 4.5. I think I agree with you. I think after talking about it and realizing how much work actually went into making this what it is, like, I think it deserves... Yeah, it's just incredible.
Dare I say, even if I think about it more, it could even get up to that 5.
Yeah.
5 out of 5. And it, like, might be a 5 out of 5.
Film. I don't have a lot of horror movies that I've rated 5. I think it's... Hereditary has a 5, and The Thing, and this movie I don't
think is on the
think
level.
Is on that same level, but it's pretty close and it's really good.
Yeah,
so I think 4.5 I think is a good
4.5 is
gives it
is
a
really good,
good. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
We did it. Oh my gosh, it was nice to talk about a good movie.
I know.
Like,
this
oh my gosh,
we talked about a good movie.
Yeah, so many good things to talk about.
Yeah, we highly recommend this film if you haven't seen it. Now you know what happens. So. But you still watch it.
You had, what, 55 years to watch it?
54 years to watch it, so not our fault. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. This was super fun. We'll see you next time.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed. Again, we had a ton of fun. Hope you did, too. And, yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you next
Thanks
time.
For listening,
thank
everyone.
You.
Bye.
Bye.